We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Who's Counting? Who's Counting is a podcast about all things having to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how elections are not run the way they're supposed to be, and how we as citizens can actually do things to help change the way our elections are run when they are not being conducted in accordance with the law. The Election Integrity Network is a project of the Conservative Partnership Institute, where I, Cleta Mitchell, am the senior legal fellow, and I am the chair of the Election Integrity Network. And we are delighted today to have with us someone who has exemplified exactly what I'm talking about when I'm talking about citizen engagement to save our election system. And she's here with us today. Her name is Heather Honey, and she is a wonderful person. We're going to learn all about her. And she has started an organization called Verity Vote. And she's going to tell us about her background, about what she is learning and has learned about the 2020 election, and maybe what some of us might be able to do to help her. So, Heather, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So, Heather, let's start with tell our audience about you. Where are you from? Where do you live? Tell us about your family and your background and sort of everything leading up to where we're going to talk about elections.
Sure. Yeah. So I live in a small town. I have a cornfield out behind my backyard. I live in a small town in central Pennsylvania near Hershey. That's probably the closest landmark for you. And I have two wonderful boys. One is going to graduate from college very soon. So we're pretty excited about that. And so I am a small business owner. I have my own company. I do investigations. I do open source intelligence training. And my background is in investigations. I worked for a time for various different companies. Before I had my kids, I was working for Ralph Lauren doing their internal investigations. And then I had my first son and decided I wanted to spend more time with him. So I started just kind of doing independent contractor work for different folks and sort of develop some new skills. And so that's kind of what I do. I have a full-time day job, run my small company. So
when you talk about open source investigations, tell us what that means.
Yeah. So open source investigations is using information that's available to the public records, things that are available online, on websites. It could be things in a courtroom, in a courthouse, in a library. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, we're talking about things that are online. We can do, videos and photos, social media posts. All of those sorts of things have so much information about people and about events. So if somebody needs an investigation of something that happened, you think about going out and finding people who were there, people who posted about it, records related to maps, all kinds of stuff like that. So it's just
interesting.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
And is that this is civilian as opposed to law enforcement, or do you do some of both?
Yeah, so I do a little. I mean, my company is just a private company. I do some training of law enforcement agencies and some other like DOD clients. I've done some training for those folks as well. Just in kind of the methodology and the techniques and things like that that you can do that you don't require any subscriptions or paid tools. And the former director of CENTCOM, former commander of CENTCOM, actually said that open source intelligence was more valuable to him than the stuff he got elsewhere. So it's really valuable information, and there's so much that you can do with it, and there's so few things that you can't do with it, or at least improve with it.
That's so interesting, because I don't know that any of us ever think about that as a profession. I mean, when you say Ralph Lauren investigations, I'm thinking, oh, what would be an example of an investigation by a company like that? Would it be background checks, or what kinds of things would you investigate without disclosing anything proprietary, obviously?
I mean, it could be anything from an employee who is passing out merchandise at the corporate level, which is where I was. One of the bigger cases that we worked on were sort of distribution center issues, right? Where, you know, you might have vendors committing fraud, people, maybe collaborating with people that are on the inside and those sorts of things. So it could be most of the stuff that I did at Ralph Lauren was internal, but, just employees doing bad stuff.
Things they shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's fast forward then. You're going along, you're running your company, you're doing your business, raising your kids, and 2020 happens. Would that be right?
That's exactly right. So
tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of an interesting story. I mean, I went to vote with my oldest son. He was home. He actually was home with COVID. I take that back. He wasn't home on COVID at that point. But we went to vote together. We stood in line for an hour in my little town here in Pennsylvania, and because we were in line for a while, we were talking to the people around us in line. And when we got inside in Pennsylvania, we have paper poll, we have paper poll books here in my county, and we have something called a numbered list, which is kind of a unique thing to Pennsylvania, where you sign the poll book and then the poll worker writes your name on a list that has numbers on it. It's called the numbered list, been around forever. And so they have these separated by last name. So we get in and we're behind an older couple. And the husband gives his name and they look him up. He signs the poll book. They write his name on the numbered list. Off he goes to fill in his ballot. His wife gives her name and they say, "I'm sorry, you already voted."
Oh, my.
And
we heard that. I just have to say, Heather, we heard that everywhere in Georgia. And then I found out after the election, other people were hearing that in other states.
Yeah. And she insisted that she hadn't. Her husband insisted that she hadn't. And, I don't really know these people. But to me, it really kind of struck me that, this woman who just waited in line for an hour was told, "Oh, you have to cast a provisional ballot." And then I was thinking, wow, does that mean that the ballot she's casting now, this provisional one's going to be rejected because they said she already submitted a mail ballot? And so this got me a little bit worked up, and I, went home and I started doing, what I do, right? I started looking at the records, what does the law say? What does it say about this? And I started to really kind of dig into it. And then I thought, okay, well, certainly, when they reconcile this, right, she's one person, long story short, I started pulling records. I started getting all kinds of records and
What kinds of records? Give us an example. You started pulling records. What would you pull?
So on the Department of State's website, they had posted a list of all of the people who requested mail ballots. They posted this data set three times. It's data.pa.gov. So I found that and I pulled that. Then, of course, I was watching the returns and I was watching Philadelphia on my computer, and they were posting. And at one point, I actually took a screenshot of this, that they had received more more mail ballots than what the records showed that they had sent. And so it showed they had returned 120% or something of the mail ballot.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
They didn't say, "Oh, we've discovered that we've got more ballots than in-house than sent out." They didn't say that, did they?
No.
You just found that by looking at their data.
Exactly. And then when I went, so I took a screenshot of it, I archived it, and then I attempted to utilize the services that were supposed to be available to my in my state, to report an election related issue. Right, there was a hotline that they're legally required to have, and but that's a whole other story. So I took the screenshot of this, and then I went back, you know, say like 5 hours later, and it doesn't say that anymore. So the only record I had of this like screenshot of it.
Now, what do you mean it doesn't say that anymore?
So the numbers were changing, right? Because Philadelphia was counting ballots for, I don't know, like what, 10 days or something?
Yeah, a while.
You know, so the numbers kept changing. And this was alarming to me because, you know, I mean, well, first of all, like I said, I'm an investigator, but I also do supply chain auditing and stuff. And so, you know, when I'm trying to figure out, are they doing things right? Is this how they're supposed to do it? You know, you got to figure out how are they supposed to do it? So, but I tried to contact the Department of State and notify them of some of the discrepancies that I was seeing. And the hotline wasn't working. The telephone hotline wasn't working. I tried to submit information online. It was rejecting me, saying I wasn't a voter, and only a voter can report. And so I ended up reaching out to my representative, who is Frank Ryan. And I said, look, here are the things that I found. And one of the things, and this was kind of down the road a little ways, was that there were more ballots reported than what we found in the voter files, right? So the SHORE system, which is the voter registration system in the state of Pennsylvania, is put out once a week by the Department of State in a file called the Full Voter Export. And you could purchase that online, right? You could just go on, you pay $20, you get the Full Voter Export. So I started purchasing these Full Voter Exports, trying to figure out, you know, like how many times did what happened to this woman happen to other people? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, what sort of went on with that? And what we found is that when these counties closed out their election, they said, we're all done. We have, you know, we're closed, we're certified, that they didn't have enough voters to equal the number of ballots that were passed on a county by county basis.
For how many counties was that true? Do you remember off the top of your head?
I want to say more than half. So Pennsylvania has 67 counties. It was more than half. The report is actually on our website, the veritivote.us website. So you can go and check it out. It has all the details on there, but it was more than half. And so we ended up sharing this information again with Frank Ryan and with a bunch of other reps that he pulled together, because, you know, we were saying, look, poke holes in this. Where is this wrong? And so ultimately, I mean, that has held up to this day. Each week, you know, there were changes made to the voter rolls. That it's a dynamic system, right? So it's never the same from day to day. But what we did is we said, okay, what is the maximum number of voters who voted at any time from the election, from November 3rd until February? What's the maximum number? And from there, we said, okay, how many ballots were cast? We don't care who they voted for. We don't care overvote or an undervote. We don't care. Just how many ballots were cast? Because again, you can't have a ballot without
a voter,
right?
Well, you're not supposed to.
You're not supposed to. But so, you know, the really interesting thing here is, you know, we gave this report to Frank Ryan. He went out, he again, like had a bunch of people try to, you know, just verify or disprove what we were finding. And he found that what we found was accurate. And so a bunch of the representatives, his colleagues, joined on with him, and they released that. And this is where it kind of got a little bit bonkers for me, because the Department of State came out and said, you know, something along the lines of, oh, it doesn't really matter who voted. All we're worried about is that we are accurately counting the ballots.
Oh, my word.
And never
thinking that there should be a basic principle that for every ballot, there has to be a voter.
Well, so it's that's a basic principle, but it's also in Pennsylvania law. And this is what was the most disturbing thing to me, because then I started to realize, because I'm not like a political activist. I've never run for office, you know, like I vote, but I'm just like a person. And And the Department of State came out and basically was like, you silly fools, like, you don't know what you're talking about, and made all of these comments that about, you know, that the people who voted don't matter. But there is a law in the state of Pennsylvania, right? There's a law, and it's, I'm going to actually read it to you. It's 3154. 3154 in Pennsylvania election code says that the total number of persons who voted in a precinct. So this is the, so we have the counties and then we have the individual precincts, that the total number of persons who voted in a precinct has to be reconciled to the total ballots cast. And if there is any discrepancy, that the discrepancy shall be investigated and no votes shall be recorded from that precinct until the investigation shall be had.
Oh my gosh. And none of those precincts investigated. There were zero investigations.
No. And the thing is that, you know, when it's really alarming when the people who are in, like, that's the chief election official in the state of Pennsylvania. And it seems like the spokesperson, maybe even the secretary, isn't aware of that law, because they gave quotes. I mean, you can look them up. They came out with like press releases that said these things. And so it was really, really disturbing. And to this day, they don't reconcile. And then they did the same thing in 2021. And I believe, and I've shared this with Seth Grove and other people, I think I know why this is happening.
And why do you think it is happening?
So Pennsylvania used to, as you know, have only absentee voting. They didn't have mail voting.
Right.
And so there were very few, because you had to fill out a thing, swear that you weren't going to be able to be there for some reason, or your illness, or you were going to be out of town. And so they, you would fill out this application, you would get approved, and then you would get an absentee ballot. But there were very few of these, you know, I mean, there just weren't a lot. And they were divided up by precinct, sent out to the precincts with the poll books for election day, and they were tabulated in the precinct. And then the precinct would reconcile everything, the people who voted, the numbered lists, the ballots cast, and the absentee ballots all together in the precinct, and they would reconcile. But Act 77 took it out of the precinct and said, everybody has to do central tabulation. Mm-hmm. And that is just a recipe. If you do central tabulation and then you don't provide guidance on how to do that precinct level reconciliation, and you just, you know, leave it up to the counties to try to figure it out with everything else that they had thrown at them by, you know, just inconsistent guidance, do it, don't do it, do it if you want to do it. It was just a mess, and they've yet to correct that problem.
Oh my gosh. So they did so this happened in 2020, and how many, ultimately, how many ballots, or what's the delta between the number of ballots, which is the number of votes, mm-hmm. for at least one office, because it's, if you have at least one office voted for on a ballot, then that counts as a ballot.
Right.
And so what is the delta between that number, total ballots, compared to the number of actual people who are recorded as having voted?
It's 120,000 people. 120. And again,
120,000 fewer people than ballots cast.
Exactly.
So these ballots came from who knows where, and are in the system, and they were counted and included in the certified totals for all the offices in Pennsylvania in 2020.
So yes and no. So I'm going to make a little bit of a distinction there.
Okay.
So there were a lot of late mail ballots in Pennsylvania, okay. Right? And the Department of State said, you know, that they only counted, that only 10,000 of the late mail ballots came in. And so after the election, we did a right to know request, right? Mm-hmm. We did a right to know request, and we said, we want a list of every single mail ballot that was sent and received. And of course, this was after the election. So, you know, there were some that were returned on December 16th, returned on December 18th, right? But those people are still people, right?
Well, you don't know that. They're ballots.
Exactly. But in terms of, in order to receive and return a ballot, you have to have at least an entry in the voter registration system.
Okay.
So we included those. So there, we included those ballots that were not, those mail ballots that were late. And that adds in, but it's 120,000 ballots that we cannot associate with a voter in the SHORE system.
Jeez. Is there any way, I know you've spent hours and days and months and years now on this. And I'm just trying to think, is there a record? Does the Pennsylvania SHORE system record how the manner, not who they voted for, but the manner by which they cast a ballot?
Yes. Yeah. So the FVE, that is the public document that the Department of State releases, has a column for who voted and then the method of vote. So did they vote absentee, mail, provisionally, or did they vote at the polls? Yeah.
How many provisional ballots? This is a question that I've wondered about. How many of those provisional ballots that say, like the woman ahead of you in line, I wonder how many of those actually were counted?
That's a really interesting question. And we tried to pull that together on a county by county basis. But you know, the reason codes are not, it'll say like we had, 50 provisional ballots in this particular county, and of that 20 were counted, but it doesn't give us the reason codes. And when we did request the reason codes, we got them in a file that, we couldn't analyze, right? We would have to have like keyed it in to try to figure it out. So, that's on our nice to have list, but we ended up getting sort of, we did a bunch of work in Arizona. We've started to do some work in Michigan now. And so we have a list of things that we really, really want to do. One of my desires is to do a request to see how many, were rejected because a ballot had already been cast. On a county by county basis, but we haven't been able to pull that together yet.
Well, if we can get local task forces set up in counties in Pennsylvania, they can go do that research. You can tell them what they need to ask for, and that could be done pretty quickly if you had help.
Exactly.
So, what has there been any official statement or from the Secretary of State's office or any of the powers that be, or they just say, oh, don't worry your pretty little head because you don't know what you're talking about? Is that basically been
pretty much, they said that Frank Ryan was using incomplete data and that there were four counties that had not yet closed the election. This was in December, that there were four counties that had not yet closed the election. So we said, okay, all right, fine. We'll redo. So at that point, it was like 200,000, right? But we knew that. We said, that this is the number, but we don't have all of the data from these counties, right? We knew that at the time because we could see that in the data that we had. And then they said, it's unclear what data they're using, and and figuring out who voted and giving and assigning, is an administrative task only. Like basically you silly fools, you don't know what you're talking about. And like I said, that's what really kind of got me in that it seemed to me, the more that I researched and the more that I learned about this, the more I came to believe that the Department of State was making, was giving guidance for political reasons and not for, based on the law.
Not based on accuracy in the voting.
And not based on Pennsylvania law. And I mean, an evidence of that, is it that they don't know what the law is, or they feel like they don't have to follow it? They can make the law. I mean, Governor Wolf, right? I mean, the most liberal, he basically handed off his ballot to somebody else to vote for him. And said it out loud,
It's just a violation of the law.
yeah, it's illegal in Pennsylvania to do that. And the governor said he did it. And oh, well, you know, I mean, the laws exist for a reason. The laws give people confidence in the outcome of an election. And if you just disregard that, it's no, I mean, you know, we're all vilified for saying, like something's not right. But, you know, if you don't follow the laws as they're written, then
it how can you lose confidence?
Yeah. I mean, confidence. It's just hard to feel good about it.
But, you know, you're talking about a Secretary of State who, despite the statute that required signature matching on ballots that were voted by mail, she sent out the circular, was it in September of 2020, to all the county election officials saying, oh, you know, that statute that requires a signature, just don't even bother with that.
Yeah,
and
I don't think
that happened in state after state. It happened in state, it happened in Georgia, it happened in, it happened by not as overtly as the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania, who just directed people not to pay attention to the statute, but it happened by, that's just what they ended up doing in Georgia and Arizona.
So, but here's the thing. So she said, oh, don't worry about the signatures on your anonymous ballots that you drop in a box somewhere. But if you went to sign the poll book in person as a human in the polling place, if your signature didn't match, they were supposed to refer it to the district attorney.
Interesting.
You know, I mean, it goes so like, so, you know, my research partner, Andy, and I have been digging into all of these different guidances and all of this, you know, testimony even by the folks in PA. And we found some really kind of crazy things. So the first part of this is, you know, there's no ID in Pennsylvania, right?
Right. Thanks to the veto by Governor Wolf of Seth Groen's bill.
Exactly. So we have no voter ID. So you show up, they can't ask you for ID. What we thought was that when you register to vote, right, you give your driver's license number, or if you don't have a driver's, if you have a driver's license, you must give your driver's license number or your state photo ID if you don't have, if you're not a driver. Or if you don't have a driver's license, you can give the last four digits of your social security number. And the state is supposed to, based on HAVA, right, it's a federal law, compare, verify your driver's license number to the DMV. Mm-hmm. Or if you don't have a driver's license, compare your social security number to the Social Security Administration, and they set up a special verification. It's called the HAV, the Help America Vote Verification System, with the Social Security Administration that only checks the last four, right? So they're looking for a first name, or first name, last name, date of birth, last four. And it sends out rejected, right? So either I put in my social security number, the Department of State sent out a guidance that said, it doesn't matter if it matches or not, register them.
Oh my
if they,
God.
If a person gives an incorrect driver's license number, you must register them. If a person gives an incorrect social security number, you must register them, and you may not force them to verify. Like, so all of these people that are registered to vote in Pennsylvania, whether they gave ID or not,
they're still registered.
But they were never verified. So most of them are probably correct. But those that came back as non-matching is nope, that social security number doesn't go with that person. The directive from the Department of State said you must register them anyway.
Well, you know, that is something that the left is intent upon establishing everywhere. Mark Elias filed a lawsuit in December against the state of Virginia because their law requires the last four digits of the Social Security number on an application for an absentee ballot. It's one of the last remaining vestiges of in security in the voting in Virginia since the Democratic legislature took over. They have just gone through and mowed down all the various safeguards in voting. But that's one that they had not managed to get rid of. And then Mark Elias came in and filed a lawsuit in December. So we'll see what happens. But you can always tell what their intent is by the lawsuits he brings and by the guidance that these election officers, who really are taking their marching orders from these left-wing voting groups. So that's pretty amazing.
And those safeguards that are in the federal law, right, that all of the states are supposed to follow, right? So a first-time voter, so Pennsylvania, we don't have ID, you don't have to verify, but a first-time voter, before you cast a ballot at a federal election, you must produce ID. You must. And it can be a bank statement. It could be any of those things. So Pennsylvania goes to mail-in voting, right? And HAVA has, it says, if you vote, if you're a voter who votes by mail, if you register by mail, or if you register online, and the first time that you vote by mail, you must include with your ballot a copy of your ID. Mm-hmm. If you go to vote in person, right, you have to show your ID. You have to produce it, or you can't. You have to vote provisionally. The Department of State in the state of Pennsylvania put on their website, hey, if you're a first-time voter and you're going to vote at the polls, you must bring ID, but completely disregarded that for all of the first-time voters who voted by mail in violation of so how can you make, if me and my friend both registered online, you know, even if we gave our driver's license numbers, right? I go to vote in person, I have to show ID and you have to verify my signature, but this one doesn't have to provide ID, can vote anonymously by mail, drop it in a box, and no signature.
Well, and it's compounded by the fact that the registrations were not verified in the first place.
Exactly.
Because of the fact that the Secretary of State just decided we're not going to apply the law. We're just going to ignore the law. So you don't have verification of the voter's identity to start with. And then you have no verification of those mail ballots. I'm telling you, I'm starting to think that what we should do is call it unsupervised voting. Because I think that, because honestly, all of the safeguards of election administration that have been adopted by the states over the last century is what the left is trying to get rid of. And if they can't get rid of it from the statute, they're basically taking the entire voting system away from the ability to enforce those laws, that all the verification, you can't stand within so many feet of the polls if you're campaigning. You can't have literature inside the polling places. You can't.
But I can stand over your shoulder and say, hey, vote.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there are all these things that in-person voting has safeguards that are written into law. But if you vote in an unsupervised environment at home or whoever, you can have somebody standing there with a gun at your head. And what is there to protect you? So I think we have to really rethink our willingness to accept unsupervised voting. It should only be available the way Pennsylvania used to do it, which was if you had proof, somebody's willing to say under penalty of perjury, I'm not going to be here, I'm in the hospital, whatever. I think we have to start standing up to this because the left has built this entire infrastructure to support unsupervised voting. And I think we have to start fighting back against that. I've realized that over the last year. I didn't used to think that. Oh, we'll never get rid of that. People love it. I think people are willing to start rethinking that also. I've heard a lot of people say, this thing is a mess. That's what President Trump kept saying. He kept talking about, you know, mail voting was a problem. Absentee voting is okay. People said, well, what's the difference?
But the thing is, and I, you know, in my job, when I'm trying to figure out, like, how did this, you know, like, what happened that allowed this loss to occur, or this crime to occur or something, you have to kind of think, like, how would the bad guys do it, right? Like, how would a bad guy do it? And, you know, if you think about it, if you want to, you know, get a second vote, right? So you're entitled to one vote, but you want to get a second vote. Would it be easier to try to show up at a polling place in person, you know, produce identification and, you know, hope that they don't know that you're there a second time somehow, or just cast drop a piece of paper in a box somewhere with nobody looking. And I mean, like, it's obviously, you know, obviously
it's not safe. It's not, there are no safeguards. Unsupervised voting eliminates all the safeguards. But so you started doing all this research as a citizen, and you are getting paid for this. Nobody's paid you to do this. No. You've done thousands and thousands of hours of volunteer work, which is truly remarkable. to me.
Yeah, and I one of the things that we have going on right now, the Verity Vote is just an organization that we started to sort of separate our day jobs from the work that we were doing. And so, Andy and I spend about 8 to 10 hours a day after our day jobs working on it. And, one of the things that we have going on right now, we have a case pending in Pennsylvania where we did a right to know request for a copy of the cast vote record. Right? Pretty benign thing. It's just a record of every ballot cast in an election. A lot of states make this a public record, just it's out there, right? There's legislation right now that Gina's working on in Arizona to make the cast vote record something.
They're working on that in Georgia too. Now, with that cast vote record, tell everybody what that is.
Yeah. So when the ballots are put into the tabulator and the tabulator reads it records how it interprets each selection for each race. And it records that as in a computer file as the record of the votes cast.
So is that a digital image or is it just a numerical addition?
So it depends on the manufacturer. So some of these companies, you have like the ESNS, Dominion, Hart, InterCivic. So they all have slightly different cast vote records. Some of them actually include a very low resolution copy of the ballot image. Some are just like a CSV file, numbers and letters, and then you have to see which office it is. But the idea is that you should be able to look at that and arrive at the same conclusion that the certified results. And that's all there is to it. So I did this request. This has been, by the way, granted to other people in Pennsylvania, but I believe, and I have some evidence of this, that I've kind of gotten under the skin of the Department of State with some of the research that we've done. And so the county that I did this, it was just a public records request to the county. They took that record, the request, gave it to the Department of State. The Department of State weighed in on my public records request and sent an urgent memo to 67 counties.
Oh my God.
Warning them of this potential request in their county and told them to deny, like how and why to deny this public records request. And, I have talked about this with members of the Pennsylvania Senate, people that actually write the law, the people that make the laws, and they assure me that the Department of State's email to the counties is wrong on the law. And basically what they are alleging is that in Pennsylvania, there's very few exceptions to Pennsylvania's right to know law, very few exceptions to what is a public record. And one of those exceptions is the records of assisted voters, right? So voters maybe who couldn't read or write, who needed assistance to vote, that's not publicly available. The contents of the ballot box, that's a very specific phrase, contents of the ballot box and contents of the voting machine, right? It doesn't say ballots. In Pennsylvania election code, the word ballots appears like 500 times. But the phrase contents of a ballot box only appears a handful of times when the lawmakers were intending to say those things that are inside a ballot box while they're in there.
Once they come out, they're no longer contents.
Exactly. And in fact, Act 77, as much as I dislike most of Act 77, it actually has a section in it where it says that the ballots and the envelopes are declared to be public records.
Oh my gosh.
So the Department of State sent out a thing that said, don't give it to her because it's the digital equivalent of the contents of a ballot box.
It's also the digital images of the ballots that are public records.
Exactly. And so it's wrong on the law. So they did that. The county denied me using the argument from the attorneys with the Department of State. I appealed to the Office of Open Records. I was denied based on the fact that I'm just a whoever, and these election officials know way more than I do about it. And so I have this case pending. And again, I mean, like it's just me and Andy. And so
the you basically don't have an attorney. You can't file the lawsuit.
I did.
You did file it.
I did pro se. And we have our case is going to be in the middle of June. And I feel good about it. I think that, the law is on my side, and I'm optimistic about it. But they all of these other Patriot groups out there in Pennsylvania who are now trying to apply and get the CDRs are being denied, based on honeybee-like combing. And it's very, really frustrating that they're trying to obstruct, right? Because transparency is what gives people confidence, right? If you want people to believe and have faith in the system, then make it transparent. Let them see, like, why is this secrecy? Why are they, think about the money that they're spending.
Yeah, what are they?
Prevent a citizen from getting a public record.
What are they hiding? So tell us you've got Pennsylvania on the run, obviously. So tell us how you got involved in Arizona and the audit. What did you do with regard to that audit?
Yeah. So, through the work that I was doing, I started doing some other sorts of election related research for some of the folks in the Pennsylvania legislature, and ended up meeting some other people who were doing sort of similar work. And I met a subcontractor who was working on a plan to do the Maricopa County audit. And at the time, there was no contract or anything like that for it. They just said, hey, there's a chance that this is going to be approved. There's a chance this is going to happen. Do you think you could help? And so what we were tasked with doing was coming up with like a process to do, counting, hand counting, millions of things, right? I mean, that is a pretty big undertaking. And then, my background in supply chain audits and auditing in general, they said, hey, could you, kind of help us come up with some like procedures and a process for doing this? And one of the things that they wanted to do was to look at the paper ballots. So Andy, who I was working with on other things there, is an engineer, a physicist, and has all kinds of experience in testing, measurements, microscopes, all of that sort of thing. So he started doing some work on how can you look at 2. However many million pieces of paper really fast and get meaningful stuff for it.
So and make sure that you don't lose any of the pieces of paper and that they're all recorded and documented. That's a very daunting challenge, which always is what I think of when people say get rid of all the voting machines. I think, oh, all that paper.
Yeah, I mean, people who saw the audit taking place and like saw those live streams. So didn't really realize, we had those ballot corrals, right? Every time a box left there, we knew exactly where it was going. We had it documented 3 different ways to know where the box was going, who was getting that box. So there was a whole lot more to the movement of all of those ballots to make sure that they came out of the box, not just out of the box they came out of, but came out in the order in which they were in there.
Yes.
Because, we wanted to be able to compare it to the CVR, and the CVR, it goes that read through that way. So there was a lot to that. And so we sort of worked out that process. The counting part, we met a bunch of times in Philadelphia and worked out that process. And then, Andy and I bought some equipment, tested some equipment. Yeah.
And what kind of equipment?
So we tested microscopes. How could you very quickly and easily capture images of the paper with a microscope? We wanted to be able to do this in a way that was consistent, right? Uniform. Mm-hmm. And so we set up a PE station in my garage and bought. So originally, what they were thinking about doing was using a scanner, right? But we couldn't feed it through like an automatic feed because they said we could not damage a single ballot. And an automatic feed has something like a 3% jam or something like that. So we couldn't do that. So instead they said, okay, well, let's try a bed scanner. But Andy immediately was like, that would take like years. Yeah. Put it in a bed scanner, close the bang, push the button, flip it over. So he said, hey, why don't, you know, instead of the scanner thing, let's try cameras. What kind of lens could we get? Because of course the Maricopa County ballot is 8.5 by 19 inches long. So, So you have to think like, how can I get an image of that? Yeah. 8.5 by 19. So we had to test out different lenses on the cameras, different resolutions. How could we capture this in a way that was, you know, accurate and flat? And we ended up like a different couple different mounts we tried, all of that kind of stuff, set it up until we had that process done. And then we contracted, Andy designed a mount to put all four of the cameras on so that the people didn't have to adjust them. They didn't have to, all they had to do was click a button. So you just stick the ballot in, click a button, move on. So he designed that. We had somebody build that in Arizona. Shane is his name. He did a fantastic job. He built them we refined it. And so that's what we did before Maricopa. And then when the audit was over at the tail end of the audit, I had COVID. I was in the hospital missed the kind of tail end of that there. But, you know, Andy and I were both really not satisfied with the way that ended up.
Why is that? What did you think were the problems?
Well, you know, I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, we never got the information that we wanted. You know, there were things like, you know, we were able to give a list of subpoena items, things that we really wanted the county to be compelled to give us. We wanted information from the printer, right? This actually made it into the report. Way before we ever went there, I reached out to the folks at Runbeck and I said, hey, I would like to get some information about the paper that you use, the process that you use.
Okay. And tell everybody who Runbeck is.
So Runbeck is a company that prints the ballots and the ballot envelopes for many counties, including counties in Georgia. Mm-hmm. But in Maricopa County, they not only print the ballots, but they also process the returned mail ballots and scan the envelope images and hold on to them until the signatures are verified. And so they have a much larger role in Maricopa County election operations than they do in other states where they do provide the printing and the mailing services there. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so you were talking before I stopped you, were talking about the things that you were concerned about that were not concluded properly, and you mentioned Runbeck. So what were some of the things that you were concerned about and that didn't get done?
Yeah, so we wanted to know, like we had, you know, made some observations about the paper ballots. And in fact, you know, we were trying, like some of the processes that Andy set up on these microscopes was intended to capture things that we discovered about the ballots down there. And what we were trying to do is confirm with Runbeck, the printer, you know, are there any exceptions to this? Would there be any time that we would see a ballot that wouldn't have these features? Did you use more than one lot of paper, right? I mean, they print them off of these rolls. Was it all the same manufacturer or did you deviate from that at all? Did you have any leftover from the last election that might be a little bit different?
You mean the paper?
Yeah. They originally, I had a meeting scheduled with Jeff Ellington, and then the Maricopa County attorney told him not to talk to me.
And Jeff Ellington is the person who is with Runbeck.
Yes,
he's the CEO. For Maricopa County. Yeah. Oh, for the whole company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know, that we wanted that. We didn't get that. We wanted their records, right? Procedures and how did they do things? And we wanted chain of custody records and we wanted all sorts of things like that. And, you know, obviously, you know, we were just two subcontractors, right? We were just subcontractors at the audit. We weren't in charge. You know, we had our little areas of things that we were doing. I was incredibly concerned about the UOCAVA ballots And
those are the uniformed overseas voters, the military voters and Americans, who, citizens who live in other countries.
Exactly. And what we found is that, you know, the number of that, which you would imagine in the midst of a pandemic when the Department of State was flying everybody, you know, sending out these flights to bring people back home, that the number of overseas civilians, the overseas citizens, right, would have been less in 2020 than in other elections. And in fact, what we found is that the UOCAVA, the uniform overseas ballots, were mostly not military.
Oh my.
And this isn't just in Arizona. I mean,
no, it's everywhere.
Everywhere. It's not.
There was a precipitous drop in the military vote in 2020. I don't know if anybody's ever really examined that.
Well, so that's one of the things that we in Pennsylvania and in Arizona, we've looked at it pretty extensively. We have turned over a lot of other information to, again, this was after. So back to the original story. So the audit ended, the report came out with Cyber Ninjas. We were not satisfied. And so what we decided to do was a little bit of what we had done in Pennsylvania, just use the public records laws as they exist, the FOIA laws in Arizona, it's public records requests. Mm-hmm. And we started asking for all of those records that we couldn't get when we were, you know, down there. And so one of the things that we started with was the Dropbox chain of custody.
Oh, right.
Arizona has a very, very specific law about if you're going to have a ballot drop box, here are the requirements for retrieving ballots from those drop boxes. And so we said, okay, well, this is auditable, right? We know what the law says. We know what the requirement is. We can audit this. So we got all of the chain of custody documents for all of the drop boxes in the 2020 election in Maricopa. And then we had a bunch of magnificent volunteers that agreed to help us, because some of the things that Andy and I want to do are not possible with two people. And so we're fortunate that we made a bunch of good friends while we spent our time in the Coliseum and after. And so we recruited them. We said, hey, we have all of these handwritten documents. Could you guys help us turn this into data that we can sort of work with?
Right.
And they did it. And so they did all the data entry for these about 2000 chain of custody forms. And so then we did quality control on it to make sure that there were no errors in the, you know, typos, transpose numbers. So we did that. Andy made this form that was absolutely like, I mean, his skill set is huge. And he made this entry form so that it was really easy for them to kind of go through all of these documents. And the sort of the punchline of that is that what we found is that Maricopa County reported in their final canvas that they had 923,000 ballots returned in drop boxes.
Wow.
So Arizona law says they need to have chain of custody documents for 923,000 ballots. So we went through all of these forms and we took the total number of ballots on the that were recorded as being retrieved from these drop boxes. We added them all together and we came up with 183,000 out of 923,000. So there were 740,000 ballots that were retrieved from drop boxes, allegedly, that had no corresponding chain of custody.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah. And again, like, so, you know, when I say like we weren't satisfied, you know, we had been working on this election stuff for a long time. And one of the things that we noticed, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, is that there are a lot of allegations out there, a lot of claims being made,
right?
A lot of statistical analyses, but there's no evidence-based stuff. And that's where we said, you know what? We're not interested in the statistics. We want to talk about the evidence. And so every one of these investigations that we do, we back it up with evidence. And in this case, we turned this over to the Attorney General's office. We actually met with the Attorney General's investigators. We met with folks who are doing the sort of civil side, the process part. And we said, hey, you know, this is what we found. Here are the records. You can verify this. This is rock solid. Like, definitely you can, you know, we encourage you to verify our findings. And in fact, when Mark Brnovich put out his interim report, one of the three things that he mentioned in there was our Dropbox chain of custody report.
Well, so what are they going to do about it? Is there anything they're going to do?
You know, I hope so.
People ask me that all the time.
Yes.
I'm just going to ask you that because it's always very frustrating when people ask me that. I go, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, I really hope so. And in fact, we just got another one, and this, we don't even have this report on the website yet, but we have reported it to the Attorney General's office. This interesting phenomena where they do something. So, you know, you get a mail ballot in Arizona and you show up at a vote center, not a precinct, because you could vote anywhere there. You show up at a vote center and you say, hey, I want to vote. And they look in the system. They're like, well, we already mailed you a ballot. Arizona law says that that person can vote provisionally. And if their other ballot isn't returned, that their provisional ballot will count. But Maricopa County said, nah, we're going to give this person a second mail ballot. Which is, again, that is not consistent.
Violation of the law. And it's crazy because you've got this live ballot out there somewhere.
Yeah. And so in the, you know, we put this out there. The county said, oh, you silly fools, we verify that they haven't returned it by using the site books. But if you look at the results of the people who were told based on the site books that their ballot had been returned and were made to vote provisionally, right? So it's sort of the opposite of that.
Right.
They were wrong 70% of the time. They were wrong 70% of the time.
Meaning that they had not really gotten their ballot back.
Exactly. So if they were wrong 70% of the time that way, what percent of the time were they wrong the other way? So we did a public records request and we said, hey, you know, you're using this process that deviates from the election procedure manual, deviates from Arizona law. Can you please provide us with the records of authorization to deviate? Right. If you received some sort of permission to deviate from this, please provide us with a record, whether it was a request for an alternate process, a request to deviate from the manual, whatever it is, please provide it. And they responded back. They said they have no responsive documents.
So there was no guidance. They just were making it up as they went along.
I mean, I see no authorization to do that. There was no testing of that process. The law is clear. If you got a ballot, you can vote, but you got to vote provisionally. And they just said, meh, we're gonna change this up. And again, we said, okay, tell us how you are allowed to do that. Where do you get your permission to deviate? And they had no responsive documents.
You know, do you think that was that came from the audit was just of Maricopa County. Do you think that this happened in Pima County and the other counties, or was it a county decision, or do we have any way of knowing?
Yeah, so I actually did a pretty exhaustive search to see if there was anywhere else in the state of Arizona that they were doing what they call a real-time provisional, where they're given a standard ballot in person to vote and it gets just commingled with everything else. So there's nothing, there's no check.
Yeah, that's kind of a pretend thing. That's a moniker, but it's actually just a regular ballot.
Exactly. It's a regular ballot. And I found no record of it in any other county. And in fact, the first record that I could find of it, even in Maricopa, was in 2018. So far as I can tell, 2018 was the first that they even used this real-time provisional process. And so that's...
So Heather, tell us what you're doing now, what you're working on now, how people can find your reports, and how people can help you. How can people help you?
Yeah.
What's your website?
So the website is Verity with a T, V-E-R-I-T-Y, vote.us, verityvote.us. We have four of our reports up there right now. I think I talked about two of them today. There's two other ones up there that we didn't have a chance to talk about today. And you can download them you know, it's up there just for people to read and to learn from them, like what are the real issues of election integrity here? Mm-hmm. What they can do to help, you know, we have a form on there if you want to donate. Some of these records that we request, they end up charging us for, and we have to pay for them. You know, so if people want to donate to support our effort, there's also a form on there. If there's something that somebody feels like we should be focusing our energy on, something that we should be looking into that maybe we're not, you know, there's a form to submit that to. So I would just encourage people to go there, to look at the work that we've done. We have four reports that are kind of in the works. We're kind of going through a process where we always have somebody verify, right? So we, you know, have findings, and then we say, before we put this out there, can, you know, this organization or that organization, please fact check us, verify, make sure that everything that we're saying here is accurate, because we don't want to put out anything that is, you know, that is questionable. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of our process. And so some of the stuff we're working on is pretty interesting. I hope it's going to make an impact. We have one of the reports on our website is about third party access to Pennsylvania's voter registration system. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that report says part one, because we have some pretty interesting public records requests that we've just received that are going to be part of this part two. But we felt like we wanted to at least make people aware of what kind of access was given by our Secretary of State to the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign, the DNC, Rock the Vote.
And in that report, what it shows, because I remember I was just going through some of your reports after I'd first met you after our Arizona Election Integrity Summit. And so I was just sitting looking at some of the reports, and I saw the Pennsylvania report, and you had referenced it in your presentation. And I looked at the list. There are 20 or 30 left-wing groups that have direct access to your voter registration system. You said that every Friday it comes out and you can pay $20. These people have real-time access they don't have to pay $20 every time they go into the system.
No, they don't. And you know, so you know, they have access to a web, you know, API, but the state of Pennsylvania has a pretty good online voter registration site. You can go register online. So there was really no need to give these organizations that kind of access to register directly. They can bulk upload. They are allowed to capture the driver's license, the social security number, the signature of every person who uses their app to register. But what's alarming in this case, I mean, there's, you know, most, you know, Rock the Vote tries to get all the states to do that, but only like four states out of 50 grant that kind of access, because it's just not necessary. It's just an unnecessary vulnerability. And but in Pennsylvania, our Secretary of the Commonwealth actually had the Hillary Rodham Clinton campaign and Rock the Vote come in and build it on the back
end. Oh, my gosh.
So it wasn't just, oh, here, we've developed this, you know.
Here you can have access to it.
Yeah. They said, hey, come on in and let's make this how you want it. And so they were working on the back end of a system, and you know, who knows what, you know, what vulnerabilities may or may not exist. And nobody's even looked at it. And the Department of State, when the Auditor General attempted to do an audit of the voter registration system, of the SURE system,
yeah,
they blocked him. They refused to give him access to any of the relevant records, and did not disclose to him that they had granted access to these third-party organizations.
So they let the third-party organizations, but not the auditor, have access to their system. That's a wonderful state of affairs. And then they wonder why we have mistrust in government entities in the election space. And we have the Department of Homeland Security creating a governance board for misinformation to keep us from talking about things like this, because they don't want us to tell people about these different things. But you know, we could spend hours and hours talking to you, Heather. You've done such an amazing service. It's just, I knew when I first heard you and met you, I thought, this is a truly remarkable woman, and you are truly remarkable. And we cannot thank you enough for spending a little of your time, your valuable time with us. And I want to remind everybody, www.veritivote.us. Go online, send a few dollars Heather's way. She could sure use the help. She's doing all of this out of just her loyalty to America. And we thank you so much for all you're doing, and thanks for spending some time with us. We're going to be very interested in your Michigan report that I think will be coming out soon. We're going to have you at our Michigan summit in May and telling them about what they need to be doing. And hopefully we can start getting some people to help you and with some of the work that you need. So thanks for all you're doing. We appreciate that. Tell Andy we appreciate him as well. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for joining our podcast, Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a project of the Election Integrity Network, which is a project of the Conservative Partnership Institute. And we urge everybody to share this episode, subscribe to our podcast, visit our website, keep abreast of what's going on with election integrity news and happenings across the country, what's going on in Congress, state legislatures, and what we can do as Americans to re-engage and reclaim our citizen oversight of our election system. So with that, thank you so much for being with us, Heather, and thanks everybody for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, become part of the Election Integrity Network.